pastor named John Ortberg, and he was like super successful, and the church was going well, and he was writing books, and he was doing it, but he's like, he didn't like himself. He didn't like his life, and so he called his mentor, who was Dallas Willard, and said, what must I do to be the me that I want to be? What must I do to be the kind of person I actually want to be? And Dallas Willard, who was he's over the philosophy department at USC, he told him, he said, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. So he didn't tell him like, hey, you need to start doing this, this, and this. He's like, no, you actually need to stop. You need to stop doing all these things. He says, hurry is the great enemy of spiritual life in our day. Hurry is the great enemy of the spiritual life in our day. And what we talked about last week is that hurry actually cuts us off from the things that give us life. They cut us off from other people. Like, you ever tried to love somebody or be patient with somebody or enjoy somebody while you're in a hurry? It doesn't work. It cuts off our relationship with God, right? We don't have time for him. Like, God was like, hey, I want to go for a walk with you in the garden. They're like, no, we're doing some other things. We're too busy. We're too busy sinning. And it also like cuts ourselves off from ourselves, right? We're not healthy. We're not emotionally healthy because we're always frazzled and running. I've been doing a lot of reading coming out of last year into this year just on emotional health. Like, how do we relate to ourselves? How do we relate to other people? And hurry destroys it. It destroys all of it. And so he says, you need to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our life. And so in this series, we're looking at what does it look like to live at a pace and with a purpose that reveals that we trust that God is God and that we are not. That reveals that we trust that God is God and that we are not. And so we're going to look at these practices. God gave us these practices, these rhythms, these, some call them spiritual disciplines, that help you live at a pace that is sacred, live at a pace that is human, that lives in the pace that brings life. And so it was interesting. Will, it was Will. Last year he had career day, and there was four people that came in to talk, and it was Johnny Bench, who was a professional baseball player. Like, he's like a what do they call him? Motivational speaker type. Like, he speaks for a living. It was me, who was a pastor. Another guy who was a lawyer. And then the guy at the end was a pilot. And he came up at the end. He's like, I got to go after three, like, professional speakers. So the pilot was the most entertaining. He got the most questions, most interaction. But the lawyer said something that was really interesting. Somebody said, like, hey, how did you get into being a lawyer? And he said it actually started when he was in fifth grade. And he had ADHD. He couldn't sit still. Maybe he was just a fifth grade boy. He couldn't sit still. And so somebody said, like, they had him just start reading. And the practice of reading caused him to what? Slow down and stop. He developed this new practice, which then shaped everything else that he did. And now he is a lawyer. And guess what lawyers do for a living? Read. That's what they do. They read. So, but what do? He started a practice, a rhythm, a new thing to help him in the midst of his hurriedness, in the midst of his busyness. And God does the same thing for us. He's like, hey, your hearts are hurried. Hey, the world is hurried. Hey, everything is hurried. I am going to give you some things that are a gift to help you slow down, to help you have rest, to help you have peace. And one of those things that we're going to talk about today is this practice of Sabbath. One of the things as we get into the Sabbath, and we'll explain what it is, why we need it, and how to actually practice it. One of the things that we have to stop and ask on practice, again, it's in Mark chapter 2, verse 23 to 28. This idea of the Sabbath, that why do we have it? We need to stop and say, hey, why are we so hurried? Have you ever stopped and thought about it? Or are you too busy? like me, right? Why are we so hurried? Why can't we stop? And at the core of it, it stems from a desire. We have desires. And so our desires drive the things that we do. And so we need to stop and ask, like, why can't we stop? In the book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, John Mark Comer put it this way. He says, we live with chronically unsatisfied desires. Like an itch that no matter how many times you scratch it, doesn't go away. No matter how much we see, no matter how much we do, no matter how much we buy, no matter how much we sell, no matter how much we eat, drink, experience, visit, go, we always want more. Right? Think about two of my favorite, what are those things when you take words and make them abbreviations? Yes. Like, just think about these things, right? What are good ones right now? Like YOLO, right? YOLO, you only live once. And everybody's like, just stop. And that's a cultural thing that, like, you can just say, oh yeah, YOLO, of course, then I will do it. What is YOLO? You only live once, so do it. You only live once, so you better squeeze it in. You only live once, so you better fit it in, right? You should go do that. It's a sign up for a hurried life, right? What's another one that you see on a thing? We got FOMO, right? Can you be a little younger for this one? Fear of missing out, right? It's a problem with the amount of social media and things like that. There is a fear of missing out. Does anybody else struggle with this? Like, I did that. Like, when I was younger, and I still do this in other ways, but like, man, even if I did not want to go out on a Friday night, if I was too tired, if I was like, this isn't gonna be fun, I don't have any money, right? Whatever it was, I would still go, right? I don't wanna be hungover in the morning, but I would still go. Why? I don't wanna miss out. And we're still driven by this. We still are driven by this fear of missing out. And look, God gave us desires. Desires are a good thing, right? We went through Ecclesiastes last year, the year before, and it said that he has put eternity in our hearts. God's given us desires. He wants us to enjoy things. He wants us to do things. He's the creator. He gives us good things. And so desires aren't bad. The issue we run into is that the things that we seek to satisfy our desires, they can't satisfy. It's God that has put eternity in our heart. Only God can ultimately satisfy the desires that we have. Only when we're content and have peace and are satisfied in God that we can begin to then enjoy all these other things that we want to experience. Only God can satisfy us. Willard went on to say, he says that we're made by God, we're made for God, we're made to need God, we're made to run on God, and we're at home only in God. And when we seek to satisfy our desires in things other than God, as Romans 1 says that they worship the created things as opposed to the creator who is blessed forever, it leads to restlessness. It leads to hurriedness. It leads to the trifecta of A's. It leads to anxiousness. Anybody get anxious? Some of y'all are anxious because you're sitting here right now and you're like, I got to get all this stuff done by tomorrow. It leads to angst. Anybody just like run through life with like a low level angst? Karina's like, are you okay? And I'm like, yes. And she's like, you should tell your face. Like, we have this angst. We have this worry. And then the angst, at some point, things go bad and we just get angry. And it just all just sort of blows up. And you're like, just get out of the way of that. And it's all because we're trying to satisfy our desires and things other than God. But God's good. He loves us. And so today what we're going to look at is what does it look like to stop the cycle? What does it look like just to say no? To literally stop? We'll get into it. That's what Sabbath means. One of the things. It's the Hebrew word for stop. What does it look like to stop running after all the things that we think will scratch this itch that we have? And so God gave us, isn't that funny? He gave us a day. You want me to show you? Like, I'm going to give you a whole day so you don't have to be hurried. And what a gift that is. And so we're going to look at Sabbath. We're going to look at this principle of Sabbath, what it is. We're going to look at the purpose of Sabbath, why we have it. And then we're going to look at the practice of Sabbath, how we can actually practice this. How can we actually do this? So first, we'll look at the principle of Sabbath. And this Mark passage. I'll kind of refer back and forth to it, but the main point of the Mark passage that we're going to look at today, the main point of the passage, like the main point of every passage of the Bible, is that Jesus is Lord. And because Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. He is the point of the Sabbath. In Mark 2:27, it says to them, he said, "And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man, Jesus, is Lord even of the Sabbath." He says he's Lord even of the Sabbath. And what Jesus is doing is he's tying back to what the Sabbath is. Ultimately, Sabbath is rooted in creation. If you got a Bible, you can go back to page one. We'll start in the beginning, literally. And that's where the scriptures start. It says in Genesis 1, it says, "In the beginning, God created." And so when Jesus says Jesus is Lord, he's saying that I am Lord. I am the creator. And in creation, what we see is that the earth, it says it was in 1:1 and 2, it says it was without form and it was void. There was darkness. There was chaos over the land. It wasn't. Why do I try and say words I can't say? You can't habitate it. It was uninhabitable. And so that's what you see at the very beginning. And then what we see in the rest of Genesis 1 is the rest of creation is God's bringing light into darkness. He's bringing order out of chaos. He's filling the void of the world with the beauty of his creation. So you see God creating all these things and bringing this light into darkness, order out of chaos. And then in Genesis 2, so he goes through the 6 days, and the first day he did this, and morning and evening, he goes through all of them. And then in Genesis 2, turn to page 2, look at what it says. Genesis 2, verse 1, it says, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on them, the seventh day, God," listen to the word, "finished his work that he had done, and he," what? "He rested on the seventh day from all of his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation." So on the seventh day, it says that God rested. It literally means it's this word Shabbat. It means that he stopped. So God stopped. God rested. Now, it's not like I need to rest because we went camping on Friday. I'll get some camping stories here in a minute. We went camping on Friday night and slept for 4 hours, which is two more than I thought I would get. God didn't get tired and he's sort of worn out from things, but it says that God stopped, that God rested, that God blessed. And he's not saying that God got tired. He's God. He is creating all things and sustaining all things eternally forever. Only a holy God, right? He is powerful. He's majestic. He is great. It's not saying that he was tired. It says when he's saying that he rested, it means that it was completed. That his work was done. That creation was full. The work that God did in creation was done. And this word for rested, it means that he also delighted in. So have you ever done something that was difficult to do? Maybe it was a piece of art or fixing something or building something. I don't have these skills. I just read about people that do. And you get done and you put something together. And then what do? You just look at it and you enjoy it. You're satisfied with it. Like when I try to hang a curtain rod and it stays up and the thing doesn't fall down and the directions say 30 minutes, takes me 2 hours. When I'm done, I'm girl, look at that thing. I hung a curtain rod and it hasn't fallen yet. Right? I'm satisfied with it. I'm enjoying it. That's what God was doing. He created all things. He gave them all things and it was complete. It was done. He was satisfied. It was finished. Now, did God just let me just move on to, whatever project I haven't done yet, right? No. God continues to sustain. He continues to uphold. So it wasn't done. He was satisfied with it. It was complete. It had reached its fullness. God rested. He enjoyed. He delighted in his creation. This all helps us understand what we're supposed to do with Sabbath. Now, the story doesn't end after chapter 2. It actually goes into chapter 3, and Sabbath doesn't end either. It's just actually beginning. Sabbath is mentioned 100 times in the Old Testament, and then it's mentioned 60 times in the New Testament. Like, it's sort of a big deal. It's actually in the Ten Commandments. But what we see is that God created this perfect and good world, but what, Adam and Eve, they don't trust God. They don't see their limits within creation as good. They sin against God. They put their trust in other things. They're banished from the garden. They get sent out of the garden. They live in the, what, chaos and disorder and the darkness and the hurriedness of life without God. Right? And then the movement of the Old Testament, they become enslaved in Egypt. There's more darkness. There's more slavery. But what does God do? He delivers them out of slavery. He promises that I'm going to put you in the promised land where there's going to be order and beauty and goodness. You're going to live in my presence and worship me. And it's in this, after he delivers them from slavery, that he gives them the Ten Commandments. And one of those commandments is keep the Sabbath. Keep the Sabbath holy. They don't listen. Right? They turn to other gods. They worship other things. Amos chapter 8 actually says that the people did not want to practice the Sabbath because they wanted to get back to oppressing the poor and making money and getting more stuff. Right? That has nothing to do with our culture, does it? So they didn't listen. And then so the prophets come and say, I'm going to bring you one who will deliver you, that will rescue you from this darkness, that will rescue you from this chaos, that will fill the void that you have. And then Jesus comes in Matthew, Mark chapter 2 and says what? I am the Lord of the Sabbath. I've come to rescue you. I've come to deliver you from darkness. I've come to deliver you from the slavery of sin. I've come to deliver you from evil. And I've come to deliver you ultimately from death. That's what was going on in all of Mark chapter 1 and chapter 2. Jesus is delivering people. He's bringing them rest. He's bringing them healing. He is making them whole. He is bringing light into darkness. That's the context of Jesus saying, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. And what did we look at last week? What did he say in Matthew chapter 11? He says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Like, this is the gospel. This is the good news. We're enslaved, and Jesus comes and says, I will give you rest. I will bring you freedom. I will deliver you. And so this Sabbath day, this one day, it's a day to stop. It's a day to rest. It's a day to worship and enjoy God. That's what we're going to look at today. But ultimately, the Sabbath day, it's just a pointer to the divine rest we need in Jesus. It points us to a deeper rest that we all have. And it says that Jesus is the source of this rest. Jesus is the one that will give us this rest. Jesus is the one that will scratch the itch that we all have. He's the one that will satisfy us and bring us peace. And so this idea of Sabbath is a gift from God where we can stop and rest and trust that he is who he says he is. And so we'll look now at, like, so if that's the what it is, why do we have it? What's the purpose of it? There's probably more than this, but three things that we see, at least in the purpose of Sabbath, is it's rest. It's a day to worship. And this one we'll get into. It's a day for resistance. The Sabbath as resistance. But what we see throughout the scriptures is why we need this one day that's set apart. And the first thing that we see is that the Sabbath is a day of rest. The Hebrew word Shabbat, like at the core, like that's what it means. It means to rest. It literally means to stop. And so that's what we see even in Deuteronomy 20. Where there, I think it's on, I'm not sure which page it's on actually. If you flip from Genesis to Exodus, if you go down to, Deuteronomy chapter 20, he ties the Sabbath back to this in the commandments that are listed there. He ties the Sabbath back to, wait, I'm lost. Never mind. It's Deuteronomy 5. I wrote the wrong thing down. Exodus 20. I'm like, that's not where the Ten Commandments are. Like, Pastor, you should know this. In Exodus chapter 20, when he gives the Ten Commandments, he says, "For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and earth and the sea and all that is in them and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." What he does is he roots the why of Sabbath in the creation. That this is how we were created. We were created to need to stop. We were created to need to rest. And for the follower of Christ, a day to stop, a day to rest, it's a declaration that Jesus is Lord. That I'm not. I can actually stop all the things I'm responsible for. And guess what will happen? The world will go on. It'll keep spinning. It'll keep going. That God is the one that upholds the world, so I don't have to. We can actually just stop. We can stop work. We can stop work around the house. We can stop meeting all the demands that we think that we have. We can just actually stop. Sabbath is a call to stop. We were created to need it. Part of what was going on in the Sabbath that we see in the end of Mark chapter 2 and the end of Mark chapter 3 is the one, they were on Jesus because he was, his disciples are walking through a field. And so what was he doing? He was eating the grain field. And they're like, no, you're picking that, you're eating. He's like, no, like they needed to be replenished. That's what we need. We need to be replenished. A Sabbath is a day to replenish the drained. Right, we lived in a world of drained people. You want to know why people are like kind of so mad and have that low level angst? We're tired. You know what happens when you get tired? You're angry, right? It's not good, and so it replenishes the drained. And then it goes on, and then they set up a trap for Jesus in Mark chapter 3, still on the Sabbath. And oh, is he going to heal the crippled man? It's like, yes, I'm Jesus. I'm going to heal the crippled man. Right? Because the Sabbath of the day is a day of what? It's a day of wholeness. It's a day to restore the broken. What happens when we take a Sabbath? We're restored. We're replenished. We're declaring that this is God. It's built into creation. We have to stop. And if or when we don't stop, we'll reap the consequences of it. Right? Think about this. Even I was super thankful last fall. Like for some, it was just a scheduling thing or whatever. I had like preached, I think, too many weeks. Like I'm like five or six in a row. And then after that, like my mind just doesn't work. Like I'm not creative and I don't know where the Ten Commandments are in Exodus and stuff like that. Jeremy preached. I was like, man, I felt great the following week. Why? Because I got a rest. It was super life-giving, but I was like, man, why is this so hard? And I was like, oh, I preached 10 weeks in a row. I need a rest. Thank you, Jeremy. And we need it. We're not mentally strong. We become mentally lethargic. We become emotionally unhealthy when we don't take a day to rest. Wives, this is probably some of what's wrong with your husband. We need it. We become angry and irritable. And then physically, what happens when we don't take a day to rest? We start breaking down. We were just talking about it while we were setting things up. Like one of the things, like the thing, we get sick. We get tired. Right? Is it coincidence that everybody is sick right now? No. Why? Because we have our full lives, right? And then we're like, hey, let's put this thing called Thanksgiving and let's put this thing called Christmas like 3 or 4 weeks apart and we'll we'll double everything we're capable of doing, right? And then what happens after Christmas? Everybody, Lucero's like, my office is swamped, right? It gets busy, We get sick. We get tired. Why? Because we're not created for it. We're created to rest. We're human. We're to trust God. John Mark Comer in the book put it this way. He says, maybe that's why God eventually has to command the Sabbath. Does that strike you as odd? It's like commanding ice cream or live music or beach days. You would think we'd be all be chomping at the bit to practice Sabbath. But apparently, this is the convicting part, there's something about the human condition that makes us want to hurry our way through life as fast as we possibly can. To rebel against the limitations of time itself. All right, this is the part, like, I'm sorry, this is just convicting. Due to the immaturity, dysfunction, I'm included, immaturity, dysfunction, and addiction, we just want to go, and do. He says God has to command his people to do something deeply life-giving. He has to command us to rest. Isn't he a good God? He gives us a day to rest. Like, here's your free pass to stop. And we're like, I'll keep doing calculus. No, like, stop. Enjoy. And when Jesus says that I am Lord, that I'm the Lord of the Sabbath, it means we can say, I am not. I can rest. I can stop. The world is not on me. So hopefully this doesn't, I told you I got a couple camping stories. Hopefully this doesn't come across as self-serving, because this is literally the first time somebody's ever said this to me in my entire life. Okay? So we're there. And it was kind of glamping. It was at Disney World, for Pete's sake. But we did sleep in a tent. So I'm considering it camping. I was on the ground, all right? With five people in a tent. And our thing, with air mattresses. But Lucero gave us nice new air mattresses. I used our air mattress with Alana that went flat. So I slept on rocks. All right? So, but the good part. The next morning, there was, and it was with Alana's Girl Scout troop. And so there was a person, they were kind of in the window, and you could also get campers. And so they were in a camper, and they were kind of waving at us, like, hey, what's going on? And then we were just sitting around outside on the thing, like, Karina and I were just reading, the kids were kind of off playing, and I wasn't trying to control them, like, no, you can't go there, no, you can't do that, no, don't burn that down, right? And so we were there, and then the lady sort of kind of waved at her, and then she comes over to us later, and she's like, man, you guys rested so well. You look so relaxed. I was jealous of you. And I was like, nobody has ever told me once ever that I rested well, that I did nothing well. So I got to tell her about this series we're in at church. Like, guess what the series is? How to stop. And so I told her, you don't know how hard it was for me to actually stop, to not run over and make sure the kids are doing this, and to actually not just start, like, packing up before it was time to go, and just to sit there and stop. You have to actually force yourself to do it. And so will we stop? God gives us a whole day to stop, to rest. The second thing we see with Sabbath, it's a day to worship. The word Shabbat, it does mean to stop literally, but it also means to delight in. And this is what, to delight in the Lord. This, okay, now we can go to, in this Exodus 20, if you look at the top of it, verse 8, it says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. It says, look, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. It's a Sabbath unto the Lord. It's not just a day to rest. It's a day to worship. And so there's this idea in Shabbat, it's a dual idea of stopping and also enjoying God and the lives that he's given us in the world. So it's a day to stop, to enjoy, to worship, to delight in God. What did he do at the end of creation? He delighted in what was created. God, give us a whole day to delight in him and his world. It's one of the reasons that we gather weekly. It's why we're here, to sing praise, to delight in, to worship, to remember God. right? If you look at chapter 3, and I'm not going to read too much into it, but it says it's on the Sabbath day. Where was Jesus going? It says, Jesus was going to the synagogue, right? What did they do at the synagogue? Worship, all right? And so, like, is it more than just a worship gathering service? Yes. Is it less than that? No. Like, that's a part of the Sabbath. He calls us to gather, to worship, to sing his praise, to be reminded of his word, to gather together. It's what we do. We worship, we celebrate, we delight in the grace and glory and goodness of God. And so that's what we're doing here. Were we reminded? Guess what? Jesus is Lord. He's worthy of worship. We're declaring that by coming here. Now, is that all? No. So our hope is that we leave here, and what do? We continue to worship. We continue to delight in God. We eat good food, right? We go do things that we enjoy doing. We go with people that we enjoy being with, or maybe people that we need to learn to enjoy being with, right? That's what we do. Dan Allender, in this very convicting thing on delighting in God, he says, the Sabbath is an invitation to enter delight. The Sabbath, when experienced as God intended, is the best day of our lives. Without question or thought, it is the best day of the week. You want to know how to get through a week? Have Sunday. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, guess what you're doing? You're like, man, remember Sunday. Remember how awesome Sunday was. And then once like Thursday hits, you're like, man, Sunday's coming. I get to delight more. I get to, and it calls us to worship all week. It bleeds into it. We'll talk about it in a second. Sabbath is the holy time where we feast, play, dance, have sex, sing, pray, laugh, tell stories, read, paint, walk, and watch creation in its fullness. Does that sound bad? That's what it's for. It's for delighting in. It's for worship. The last one ended with conviction. This one too will too. Few people are willing to enter the Sabbath and sanctify it, to make it holy, because a day full of delight and joy is more than most people can bear in a lifetime, let alone a week. He's saying we don't do it because we can't handle it. We can't handle how good God is. We can't handle how many gifts he gives us. We got to busy ourselves with all these other things that we think will make us happy, and they won't. He's given us a gift to stop. The Sabbath it benefits us physically, but it's a blessing to enjoy. He's a good guy. Good guy. So while we're camping, while we are sitting on said chairs looking relaxed, I suppose, you know what we were doing? We were sitting there, and these like 15 like golden finches came and just landed on our campsite. And they just kind of hopped around and hung out with Karina and I, and Karina like snapped some pictures of them. Right? And then we looked over, and Weston can see everything. He's like, look, there's a hawk over there. Like four sites over there, this beautiful hawk. And then we're looking at the trees and the sun. It looked like, y'all remember the movie Avatar? It literally looked like Avatar. It was beautiful. It was amazing. Weston and I went fishing a little bit later. And then again, he's looking in the water. He's like, there's a turtle. I'm like, dude, I see murky, dirty water. And he's like, no, look there. And there's this huge turtle that swims right below us. Right, we sat there and we delighted in God's good and beautiful creation. Will we stop long enough to enjoy the blessing? Will we gather together and have the right understanding of who God is to worship him? That he's worthy of it. The third piece we see in Sabbath is what Walter Brueggemann, he's got a book. It's probably one of my favorite books on Sabbath. It's called Sabbath as Resistance. It's resistance against the slavery of the culture that you live in. In Deuteronomy, this is the Deuteronomy 5. It's on page 167 of your Bibles. What he does in Deuteronomy 5, he no longer ties it to creation. He ties the command to Sabbath to the Exodus. It starts, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as your Lord commanded. You know, 6 days you shall work, on the seventh you shall rest to the Lord your God. But if you look in verse 15, it says, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you
to keep the Sabbath day. He's saying, I'm giving you the Sabbath to remember what I've done for you. That you were a slave and I rescued you. You were a slave and I delivered you. It's a resistance to slavery. I'm not going back. Galatians says, for freedom Christ has set us free. So don't go back to the yoke of slavery. Don't forget what God has done. You were a slave. God has delivered you. Don't go back. Now, we're not slaves to Pharaoh, but we're all enslaved, right? We're enslaved to our phones. We're enslaved to our work. We're enslaved to our stuff, right? We're slaves to hurriedness. We're slaves to what other people think about us. Why do we hurry around all the time? I want people to think well of me. Right? We're slaves to other people, and ultimately we're slaves to sin. That's why we're hurried. That's why we go. That's why the Sabbath ultimately points us to the cross. Because we're restless, we're enslaved. And what did Jesus say on the cross? It is finished. The work is done. What did he say at creation? The work is complete. You don't have to be a slave to your sin anymore. It is finished. The work's complete. I've done it. You don't have to be enslaved to anything. I freed you. Don't go back to it. I've taken your sin. I've taken your shame. I've taken all the reasons that you run and try to prove yourself on myself on the cross. The work is done. It is finished. I've set you free. I entered the darkness of your sin, and I give you my light. It is finished. God is satisfied with you. God delights in you. You can stop. You can rest. We all can. Homer said, I have been delivered. I have enough. What I really need is a time to enjoy what I already have, a time to enjoy God and what he has done for me. He gives us a whole day to do it. He says, remember, you're a slave. While I was camping, I'm on a text thread with a couple of buddies, one in Orlando, one in Chicago, one in St. Louis, and one of them's out in Las Vegas right now. He texted something, and then so I sent the picture from camping, and I said, this is not the Huzzah Valley. The Huzzah Valley is a beautiful part of Missouri. It's down south, and in Missouri, you go on float trips, right? So float trips are sometimes nice, your family, your kids, and then you go floating down the river, and they get to jump off stuff, and they're... Float trips are also for like high school, college, and anybody until however old to get just completely obliterated and drunk, and it's just a big mess, right? That's the part of the Huzzah Valley I participated in. And that was like, I went camping one other time, but the last time I went camping was at the Huzzah River, right? And like, not the thing didn't, like, we blew up the whole tent. We got kicked out of the campground. We were so drunk, and it was such a big mess. We were trying to look for hotels at 3 in the morning in Sullivan, Missouri. There was nowhere. That was my last, like, that's what I'm thinking that there. I'm sitting there with Karina. We got kids, and there's hawks, and there's birds. I'm like, this is not the Huzzah Valley. Right? God is good. I was like, I've delivered you. Look what I've given you. You don't deserve any of it. And I don't, but God, who's rich in mercy, gives us every good and perfect gift. Why? Because he's a father. God loves us. It's resistance to going back to slavery. I'm going to stop each day. I'm going to delight in God. I'm going to worship God. I'm going to be reminded of what he has delivered me from, and I am going to enjoy him. That's what we do on Sabbath. We say, God, it's a declaration that I trust that you're the Lord. I'm going to rest. God, you're beautiful. Look at your creation. Look at you. I'm going to take a day just to delight in you. God, it Sabbath empowers us to resist going back to the slavery and to live freely. We need a whole day to be reminded, like, I don't want that again. I'm not going to go back to the yoke of slavery. And God gives us just some, I'll do this quick, some practices. How do we do this? What are rhythms that we can have? Shabbat, the stop, the delight, it's a verb. It's active. You actually have to do it. One, we need to stop. Brueggemann says that people who keep Sabbath live all 7 days differently. You can't go 100 miles an hour and just slam on the brakes. What happens? You crash, right? And so if your life is so full the other 6 days a week and then you try and stop on the seventh, guess what happens? You crash, right? It doesn't work, right? And so we have to live all 6 days differently. And as we keep Sabbath, it allows us to live the other 6 days differently. They become restful and worshipful and delighting in Lord. They become resistance. It takes intentionality. We need to be patient, right? You got to shift this around. Sabbath with kids, like 3 kids under 5, looks a lot different than Sabbath with kids, whatever, 9 to, how old are our kids?
7.
Yes, 7 to 10. And birthdays are coming, it's fair. We need to stop. We need to stop doing stuff. The second part, how do we practice? We need to delight in God. This is different for everybody. One author said, what indexes your heart towards God's reality and goodness? What indexes your heart? What captivates your heart to God's reality and his goodness? That's why we gather. It indexes our heart to God's goodness, to his reality. Right? Is it eating good food? Is it taking naps? Is it enjoying being outdoors? Is it being with other people? Is it being by yourself? Right? What indexes your heart? What captivates your heart? Do that on Sabbath. And the third thing is we need to resist. We need to resist. What are the things that are enslaving us? What are the things our culture says that we need more of? That we just have to have? What draws our affections away from God and others? Resist those things. And we get to have rest. We get to have joy. We get to have peace. And we need to be reminded of this. And so my prayer is that we would be people who trust in the Lord, that we would know God. And when we do, we can actually stop. We can actually rest. That we would be people who can truly worship and enjoy God. Right? I think we need to, sometimes the church thinks that we need to go do a bunch of stuff, then people will know God. Like that will help them understand God. You know what helped that other person know God yesterday? Stopping and doing nothing. Right? It allowed me to tell her about God. Right? And so sometimes Christianity becomes like, oh, I got to go do a bunch of good stuff. Or I'll be like, no. Hey, maybe the best witness we can have is just like, no, look at me. I can actually stop. Because I trust God. And that we would be people who resist and that we actually strive to enter the rest that God promises us in Hebrews 4. It's already ours in Christ. Let's pray.